to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes. Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show them a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Hello and welcome back to Action Jacks. I'm Tim Howie, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures, get a little of this, maybe. They are up 20 points. Dow Futures are up 216. NASDAQ Futures up 67. So we're going to have to search around here this morning to find out what the bleep happened, because last night they were down 200. So somebody somewhere must have promised somebody some more money or something, because there obviously was a big piece of news that came out from last night. Crazy stuff. I mean, I don't know when I've seen. I mean, how many times have I said this since we've been doing the show? But this could be it. This is a new low of the amount of stuff that's going on with the economy that's been brought upon by central banks and governments in the last few days, with China going into the commodity market. All the commodities are down this morning. Well, corn and wheat and all that stuff are down. Well, of course, it did rain some, so that's part of that. You know what they say, Matty? Rain makes grain.
Makes sense.
I've never heard that thing before, but the... The Fed will continue to dominate the market in the weekend ahead of sell-off. Now, do you think anybody think that's a good idea?
No one. Specifically your conversation with Mr. Bill Cohan last Thursday. No one thinks it's a good idea. They have to start tapering off immediately and let the chips fall where they may after that.
But how do you... Nikkei's down 953 this morning. It's 3.5%. They were down over 4. That's special. And we're rallying up. So somebody's buying something here, right? That's not something you would normally expect, right? And Europe's up too. So I don't know this is a crazy time. It is absolutely crazy time. Speaking of which, I don't know if people even want to listen to some of the stuff we talk about, Manny, because it's about how people should expect their day to go and how life should be. This is now 3 weeks in a row in the South Loop that there's been a murder. At least one. Within 1,000 yards of the office. And you know, I don't know which is worse, the fact that it happens, or there aren't 1,000 people down here this morning in front of the police or the mayor's office saying, what the bleep? How do we just all of a sudden accept this? A lady is walking down Wacker Drive at 4 o'clock on Saturday, bright daylight. Somebody runs up behind her and stabs her in the back, kills her. I don't know if it was a robbery or not. I mean, who knows what the story is? But then yesterday in the middle of the afternoon, somebody gets shot at 100 West Adams. So isn't that right in front of the Berghoff?
Yep.
So this is becoming like Sparks in New York, where you go in there and there's a mob hitting front while you're eating lunch. I mean, why this is all of a sudden becoming acceptable? See this club across the street, this persona. I don't know, they get the club crowds. Read into that what you wish, but not always, not everything. It's not just all one of those kinds of clubs. But we were late the other night. It wasn't Friday. I think it was Thursday, and they must have had a special party or what they did, because they're not usually open that early. When I say early, I'm talking 6 o'clock.
Probably a private event.
Well, all of a sudden, there's these security guys out front, and of course, all the women are wearing next to nothing, even though some of them were pretty large. Not that I noticed. I don't think there were mirrors. Anyway, it's not about that. The security guard is winding everybody down. What would possess anyone to go anywhere where you have to be winded down, for God's sake?
Or you can look at it the other way. I will go there because everyone's getting winded down. Because I'm scared that someone's packing.
But what kind of world are we living in that we have to do that and we accept it?
Agreed.
But why is this becoming... I'm not saying why do people, commit crimes. I'm saying why does everybody accept this? I mean, what is wrong? Or am I just behind the times? Which I probably am. But I mean, what is wrong? Would you go to a bar if all of a sudden you had to get winded down before you went in there?
Definitely not.
I mean, there can't be. What's the attraction? I don't know. I just don't understand. I just don't understand. I mean, but the more it gets embroiled in the fabric of things, the more it's okay. I mean, we're talking the last 3 weeks. Let's see, there was the guy who got shot with the 60 shots last week, right?
Yeah.
You know, to save the dog. Now this week we've got somebody, and so this is all within, you know, without. And the bar downstairs in our building is open on Saturday. So what do you turn the music down so you can hear the shots fired? And I'll tell you how crazy it is. Last night, my nephew was his birthday, so I traveled down south, which is crazy to go through. You know, it's not a litany of what's wrong in this world, but I just wonder, I mean, how things have changed. I mean, when the Dan Ryan, I think, opened, Dan Ryan Expressway, I-94 south of the Loop, I think it opened in 62, man. I remember it opening, by the way. I was really young, obviously, but I remember it. And, matter of fact, I was able to watch the construction of that, pretty much, because my aunt and I would always take the L from Englewood downtown, and she always liked to go shopping at Carson, so I'd go with her. I always loved riding the L. It was pretty neat. Well, that whole area was all, you know, went down alleys, and there was people, you know, porches, and all you saw were the back porches of people's houses and stuff. All of a sudden, there was houses were down, and then there was this big ditch, you know, and there was an expressway. I mean, you know, pretty bizarre when you think about it. All those people got moved out, and then so last night I'm coming back on the expressway, and I get to just north of by us. I was, you know, it was maybe Ogden Avenue or something, and somebody starts shooting off fire, you know, like fireworks, maybe by that old Ukrainian church there, and you know, like by Ogden Avenue, wherever that is.
Mm-hmm.
The thought never crossed my mind that it was fireworks. I looked on the other side of the expressway to see if I could see which car was shooting at somebody. I never even dreamed it was fireworks when I heard a pow, pow, pow. I mean, why would I on the expressway?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not that, well, it is bad that the stuff's happened, but the fact that people accept it. And News Radio 78, their whole story this weekend was, how many policemen are retiring? Because evidently they're on 12-hour shifts, vacations have been canceled, and about other stuff. Who knows, man? I don't think they like the mayor at all. But so the idea, they got like 400 guys have already retired this year, which is more than all last year or something. There's only 13,000, so if you got 400 retired in 5 months, it's a lot, or 6 months. Now, the idea that you have a system where these people, there's got to be women there too, there are 50, I don't know, you can be 55 or whatever, 50 years old, the idea that you can retire and get a check next week at that age is insane. I mean, I'm sure the union, I mean, you can retire whenever you want. Nobody can be able to force you to go to work. But the idea that you get a check and are now going to get paid for the rest of your life, we can't afford to pay these people 45 years if they live to 95. I mean, who gets to do that in any other walk of life? Every time we wonder why we're broke, you look at the stuff and you wonder who set the. Now you should be able to retire if something's wrong and you can't be a policeman anymore. There's plenty of jobs in the city. You can be a dispatcher. You can be something, right? You if you want to go to work, there's plenty of jobs in the city. But you don't get to say, all right, I'm going home and send me 85% of my salary for the rest of my life. I mean, no. I mean, I don't see how that. I know the job's stressful. I know all that good stuff, but nobody gets to do that. The money just doesn't match up, or does it? I mean, I don't, you know, it's sort of like the Juneteenth thing. I mean, I have absolutely no issue. Matter of fact, I applaud anything that has anybody remembering their past, especially the bad stuff, because you don't want ever happen to happen again. And the idea that people were freed from slavery clearly is a massive event. I mean, there's no doubt about that. Now, how these people with the amazing words they spoke, the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, somehow left, you know, black people out of it. Well, slavery out of them. There might have been white slaves too, a few, but I doubt it. At least not here. The British put all those guys in Australia, right? I don't know, whatever. So, but the idea, but every time we celebrate, we have to give the federal workers a day off? Paid? I mean, I'm all for Columbus Day for the Italians, okay? Even though Columbus turned out to be, well, he didn't turn out to be. Everybody knew he wasn't the best guy, but he was an explorer. Why does every celebration have to be a public employee get a day off with pay? when nobody else gets it. You guys don't get it, do you?
Not Columbus Day, no. And we'll see what they do with Juneteenth next year. But, yeah, we don't get a lot. We don't get Martin Luther King Day off either. A bunch of the days we don't get off.
I'm sure you don't get veterans, and I bet you don't get Columbus.
We don't get veterans. We don't get Columbus. I think the one random holiday that we picked, when I say we, that the I guess the executive team picked that we get off is, I think, President's Day.
Yeah, I bet you don't get Good Friday either.
No, we don't.
President's Day is a reasonably strong one. I think that's probably because it's a combination of Washington and Lincoln's birthday. In Illinois, Lincoln's birthday was a real big deal.
Yeah. And I think, so, you know, everyone gets, you know, Christmas off, and everyone gets New Year's Day off, and then there's kind of a gap after New Year's Day until, like, Memorial Day. So I think President's Day is sort of in the middle, and so I think that's part of the reason why they picked that, too, is it's kind of spread out.
Well, exchanges don't get Columbus Day and Veterans Day off, but they get Presidents, they get Martin Luther King and Good Friday. It's because now the banks close a lot more than the exchanges do. So now it'll be four that the banks get. Actually, you know, Illinois, if it's still around, if you have a bunch of kids and you want to take them skiing, the best weekend to go is Casimir Pulaski Day. Because
yeah.
In Illinois, everybody's off and nobody else in the country is.
Well, Illinois, public workers.
Schools.
Yeah, schools and federal workers are off.
Yeah, but if you want to go for a 4-day weekend and take the kids, it's there's nobody else at ski resorts. You got a holiday? What's the holiday?
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Plus, it's like, is it like 2 weeks after President's Day? Or it is. It's in February.
Yeah,
it's
I think season. It's in winter.
Yeah, we can't come to accept this stuff, man. We just can't. And everybody's gleeful. I mean, Durbin and Tammy Duckworth. Everybody, you know, I understand that part, but fiscally, we need to. I think right now we should easily make whatever Juneteenth a holiday, but say it's not a day off. And by the way, neither is Columbus Day, and neither is we have Memorial Day for people who died. I don't know if you need anybody who just happened to be. I don't know if you need a day off for Veterans Day. I guess is what I'm saying. I mean, it's obviously people who are veterans deserve to be celebrated. But what are we going to do? I mean, come on. The Irish people came over here and built the canals, built the railroad west, and had basically an absolutely miserable life. I've been going through some of the research in my family, and I know my grandfather's brother died in a an industrial accident when he was in his 20s, I think. Family didn't get a dime. You know, so life was miserable for a real lot of people. Okay, so now should St. Patrick's Day now all of a sudden be a national holiday where people get paid because, you know, 5,000 Irish people died, you know, digging the I&M Canal, or 3,000 or whatever it was. I don't know. I mean, it was a horrible time. It's a history that people should know. Should we have there's got to be an Asian place, the Asian New Year. Should we have, you know, the Chinese New Year? Should that be a day off because, you know, God knows how many people died in building the railroad coming this way in the mountains in the Sierra Vedas when they'd have avalanches and lose 40 people and they maybe look for the bodies in the spring. Does it really need to be a day off for people with the federal government? I mean, it's a horrible situation. It's part of our history, not a good part. But does giving somebody a day off for free, is it when everybody doesn't get it, does that help? I don't think so. Especially when you're broke. And, but you listen to these people, Duckworth, Durbin, I don't care who it is, Republican or Democrat, there's not even a smidge of a hint that they're spending literally over double what they're taking in now. I've never seen anything like it. It's as my grandfather used to say, it's beyond my comprehension. They don't care. There is no thought of worried about the next nickel, even though, I mean, what last year the deficit was what? It was over the amount they took in. It's at a number, and they're absolutely glorified with this printing money thing. We'll just print it. What happens when these, if what I think is going to happen, which I sure hope doesn't, what's going to happen to all these people that did all this stupid stuff? The Federal Reserve guys just going back to their colleges and start teaching with tenure?
Yep.
Nothing's going to happen to anybody, and all the people who get hurt are just going to get screwed, as they always do? I don't get it. Let's talk about some sports. Hey, so what's the, is today the day you can't doctor the ball anymore, or what?
Is today the official day?
Well, they said, I don't know, I'm asking you.
I think they already essentially outlawed it.
I thought, they sent everybody, didn't they send them a list of the people on the team they thought were doing it, and then they gave everybody 10 days to...
Yeah, you could be right. So then today could be the first official day. But they've really kind of cracked down on it since the beginning of June.
Have you noticed any...
I noticed a lot of change in pitchers, in their spin rate. I've noticed batting averages starting to go up a little bit.
Not the Cubs; they're going the other way.
Well, the Cubs have struggled. I think partly because they faced some really good pitching over the last week, but then the injuries are really starting to show themselves because the small sample size guys. Of course, you start playing them every day, and then you realize why they're small sample size guys. But not a good week for the Cubs or the White Sox. Overall, I think it's good for the game that they're doing this, and we're going to see more offense and more balls in play, and it's going to be fun to watch.
Well, it always intrigues me a little bit. And one of the guys who was on our softball team actually got signed by the Yankees, and we lost a left fielder, which really sucked. We couldn't replace him that summer. We ended up coming in second in a really good Mount Greenwood League, and I think we'd have had him, we'd have won. But it's hard to say. But he said it's so incumbent upon who signed you and how much you're being paid as to how you get treated in minor league stuff. Because if you didn't get signed for a big bonus and from a scout that they really think knows his stuff, you're barely looked at. I mean, you really have to stand out. And it's hard to stand out in baseball if you don't get the at bats or you don't get the starts. And in football, obviously. If you walk up and you knock the other guy halfway into the other side of the line back 10 yards, you're going to be noticed, right? If you get two interceptions in camp in one morning, you're going to be noticed.
Sure.
But in baseball, it's much harder to do that. I mean, hockey, obviously, you're out there, and if you score three goals in an exhibition game, I mean, people are going to notice you. But you watch some. I mean, I remember when Simon Sandberg came up, he was like 1-for-30. Cubs brought him up, but they had a huge investment in him. And they just let him go on. In his first year, I'm thinking maybe 220, which then was horrible. Now it's, I guess, good. And then he was 245, 265, and then ended up being a Hall of Famer. But they stuck with him. Now what happens when you got you guys like Mercedes and Wisdom and people, and they have their eventual downslot? Do you let them hang in there and work their way through it, or if you're paying them a real lot, you do, obviously. If they're not. Oh man, he was just a flash in the pan, and off he goes. You wonder if these guys are really that good at those decisions, as good as they tell you they are. Let's put it that way. I mean, you do.
It's an interesting question. And Sandberg, by the way, was a little better than you're remembering. But I do remember he got off to a really bad start.
He was 1-for-30 or something.
Yeah, but he did bat 271 his rookie year, and then he was 261, and then he was 314, 305, 284, 294. I mean, he never had the really terrible year. But he definitely started off in that huge slump, like you said, and got his way, got himself out of it, and ended up having a decent rookie year, batted 271 with 7 home runs, 54 RBIs. He had 32 stolen bases.
Well, I mean, they obviously saw something there.
Yep.
But now you get this guy from the pitch the other day. The guy who had he was pitching 100 miles an hour. Who the hell was he? The Cubs last Monday night? That was his name? Wilson? Not Wilson. But they sent him down the next day after the start, and yesterday they designated him for reassignment. They cut him. And here's the guy with the big arm, and obviously they had him in there somewhere.
The guy that had like the 6 walks or whatever in his start. I didn't realize they cut him.
Well, he was designated for reassignment yesterday.
Wow.
I mean, that's pretty quick.
Yeah, it is.
You do wonder on this stuff, but I mean, do they really think? And yet now, I mean, obviously they're paying. One thing that seems obvious, even though I really like the people, I don't see how the hell you think you go up to bat with anybody now, with the same lineup with the Ian Happ. As much as I like the guy and our friend Jessica, who was going out with her girlfriend and said he's a real nice guy, I really loved him. Haywood, I think, is one of the best locker room guys. You can't have two position players, and I don't care what you stats guys say, that are batting .180. You can't have that.
I agree. Yeah, those two guys have been horrific all season long, and
Baez isn't much better, but obviously you got to have him in the field.
But he's a lot better in every category: offense, defense.
But I mean,
he's
what does he bet? 220 or something? He's a spectacular player. If he didn't play short yesterday, they didn't win that game. He's unbelievable. but he's another guy. You can't have those three guys in the middle of the lineup and throw David Bode in there and say you're going to go beat anybody.
Baez is batting 266, which the league average is 235, okay. So he's almost elite.
But that's recent, right?
Well, it's for the season.
But, I mean, he just... All those guys started bad. Okay, you know, he's...
Yeah, he's got 16 home runs. He leads the National League in RBIs with 44. And he's batting.
Why does every time I watch him bat, he strikes out? Seems like... Maybe I just watch him bat.
Well, he does strike out way too much. But he's been... His power numbers have been good. His batting average has not been good. It's been a little bit better of late. And his defense has been spectacular.
Oh, it's unreal.
But he still has the big swing, there's no doubt, and still strikes out too much, and still, for whatever reason, doesn't adjust situationally to when he needs to shorten a swing. And then when he gets on these hot stretches where he'll have a great, you know, 7 or 10 days in a row, he's going to right center, and then for some reason he stops trying to do that, and I can't explain it.
Well,
he still makes two or three plays in the field where you go, whoa.
I've had discussions with people saying, oh man, batting average. Wait a minute. I played softball my whole life. If you have a team, if you have a guy on your team that, I mean, it's going to bat four times, if he always goes 2 for 4 and sometimes goes 3 for 4, for God's sake, the guy is gold. If you got somebody, I mean, 250 average, for those that can't do the math, which I hope everybody can, is essentially you're averaging one hit a day, right?
Yeah, if you get four at bats and you don't take any walks, it would be one hit a day.
Yeah, one hit a day. So if you're hitting 333, you're getting like out of 3 days, you're getting, instead of three hits, you're getting four, which is a big difference. I mean, it's a big difference on a 162 game season.
Yep.
But if you're under 200, you're not even averaging it. What are you, like a hit every, you know, well, out of five games, you're going to get three hits? How the hell, what are you doing there? Unless you're sticking your head out in front of it and getting hit every time.
Well, the example, the exception to that is the catcher for the White Sox. He has Monty Grandal. He's batting 154. Actually, he's batting 166. Sorry. He's batting 166, which by all accounts would be horrific. But because he takes so many walks, he's on base at a 385 percentage, which is elite. So, and he hits for a little bit of power. He's got 10 home runs. So the only way you can get away with having a really bad batting average is if you take a ton of walks. And then when you do get a hit, you're hitting for extra bases. So the walks sort of replace your singles. And then when you hit the ball, you're hitting doubles and home runs. And that's the only way you can sort of get away with
Except
it.
Except you don't. How can I say this?
Whereas Baez...
You don't take walks. Somebody walks you.
Yeah, that's not true. I mean, in some cases, yes, that's true. But in most cases, the really good guys that at on-base percentage are very good at working the count.
Yes.
And you know the difference.
Yes.
Sometimes a pitcher just walks you because the pitcher's wild. But usually, the guys that are really good at it, they know how to work it. Obviously, they have a great eye. They know how to lay off balls in the dirt. And that really frustrates a pitcher. If you can foul off tough pitches and then lay off and have a good eye and you can take a walk, that's in a lot of cases just as valuable as a single.
Well, a lot of catchers have a great batting eye because obviously that's what they do all day.
Yep.
But
he's the exception. To your point, you can't have guys that are batting in the 100s or the low 200s but also don't take walks because then they're just useless.
Well, I will wager you this, my educated friend in sports and everything. I'm going to say that if the Sox get in the playoffs, which obviously they're going to, as he's better and better pitchers, he gets walks less and less. He better bring that average up.
I think you're right. I completely agree. I think that the high walk rate over a course of a 162 game season is great, and it can make up for a bad season in batting average. But in a short series, when you're seeing elite pitching on you know every time at bat. You better be able to put the ball in play. Otherwise, you run into what the Cubs have kind of become the last couple of years. And this year, I actually think they've been a little bit better, but the last couple
of
years...
Well, they won't be if they don't get Horner and Duffy and those guys back.
That's true. But the last couple of years, we saw in the playoff series where, you know, if you can't put the ball in play, you lose 2-0 real quick.
Well, for a guy who's pitched softball for a bazillion years, Matty, when I walk people, other than the girls, which I get a brain fart... You know, it's so easy. All you do is put it down the middle. Well, then you don't. It's like,
yeah.
It's like telling yourself in golf, don't leave this putt short. I mean, what are you going to do? Leave it short, right? But basically, the people I've walked are the people I'm afraid of. I mean, you walk Frank Thomas for a reason.
Right.
Because you're not going to give him one down the middle. So if he's not going to... I'll tell you a quick story. I mean, the first time I played... I mean, we don't have much time before we get John, but we played in a really good neighborhood league. I played in two or three of them, but Mount Greenwood, the doubleheader league on Sunday, was a serious... It was more elite than a regular neighborhood league. It wasn't Kellyer or Clarendon, but a lot of guys who played there played in Mount Greenwood. So every team had two or three guys that were elite hitters, you know, pretty elite. I mean, it could have, if they wanted to make softball their full-time job, could have played for the Bobcats or somebody. Well, you could pitch around those guys, and they knew that they were the best guys, so you could throw it behind their head, and they were going to swing it because they knew they were the guy
right.
on that team. Well, all of a sudden, one day we go out to this tournament, and our first game's against Let Us Entertain You, right? I'm going, oh, God. We got like nobody.
Elite softball team for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, and all of a sudden I try and junk the first guy. He doesn't swing at anything. I try and junk the second guy. Doesn't swing at anything. Every guy was in the lineup was just as good. All of a sudden I figure I better push one in. The guy loses it. So that's the Frank Thomas of the world. It's not, these guys are a bunch of schlumps. They can't get over the plate, so I'm going to wait them out. You know what I'm saying? There's a difference. Anyway, but I think the Cubs got a chance. What are the Cubs going to do? Are they going to try and go get a pitcher? Or are they going to dump guys?
Well, they got a great outing from Alec Mills yesterday, and if he can step up and stay healthy and kind of be the fifth guy, that's really going to help. But I do think they're a pitcher short, and they have such a good bullpen. They don't even need like an ace, although that would help. But if they can get another guy that's a really solid number three type guy that can eat innings and get you five, six good strong innings every fifth day. I think that puts them over the top. But the bigger issue is they need Duffy back. They need Horner back. They need sort of those table setter guys that were really, really a big part of when they were playing better.
Yeah, because the other guys are hitting a lot better, I think. The Rizzo and Bryant, those guys.
Rizzo and Bryant's been good all year. Rizzo's been really good. Baez has been up and down, but solid on defense, and I think he's banged up too. Contreras is kind of in the dog days right now, but he's got another hot streak left in him. But they just need those contact guys back because that was when I think Happ and Hayward are what they are. I don't think they're getting anything out of those guys. So
the left fielder he's spectacular lately.
Oh, he's been great. They brought him in to replace Schwarber, and I think he's been better than Schwarber.
Oh, and he's way better.
Yeah,
he's supposed to be a little bit better on defense. SP yep. Futures up 14. Nasdaq's up 47. They weren't like that last night, but they are now. Be back, Mr. John Flanagan.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ollies, Mr. Webber on the board. SP Futures up 14. Now these are the Septembers. These are the SPOOs. The Junes went off the board on Friday. So they're the new, September is now the front month. June's gone. So, and NASDAQ's up 45. Again, those are the Septembers. Dow Futures up 145. This is a huge flip from last night when everybody was down. Almost the same amount. Now they're up, actually even a little bit more. So very strange, goings on in the market the last few days. DAX up 67.4%. FTSE down 4. Call that flat. CAC up 4. Call that flat. Asia. Big move in the Nikkei, down 953. That's 3.5%. They were down over 4%, which is, I don't know, that's a lot. Shanghai up 4, call that flat. Hang Seng down 312, that's 1.1%. So pretty much all Asian markets are down except Shanghai. That's kind of crazy. Dow Friday was down 533, for those who remember that. There's not a good memory. S&P down 55, NASDAQ down 130. So when we opened up down last night, I thought today was a day to be really afraid of. It may still be, but we're trying to come back, at least a little bit. Bonds 1.44. That's pretty much unchanged. The Bund minus 0.19. These guys have actually crept up a little bit as we're going the other way. This is very strange that the Fed and the central bank, they're kind of going. Japan, however, down almost 3 basis points. They're positive only 0.038, which is as low as they've been in like a real long time. Oil up 12 cents, 71.76. Brent up 5 cents, 73.56. So quiet there. Natural gas down 3 cents, 3.17. RBOB down a penny at 215. Gold trying to come back a little bit to 1784. That's up 15 bucks, but still a long way away from the 1900 we were playing with last week. Silver up 9 cents, 2606. Copper down 3 cents, 412. Crypto, Bitcoin down 2900, down to 32,346, which is sort of where it was last Thursday. So it must have been up over the weekend. Matty, what do you have for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a decent start here coming in on the Edens and Kennedy. Eisenhower and Stevenson still very quiet, too, and the Southside Expressways are looking good. There is some standing water on a couple of stretches of the Dan Ryan due to last night's storms, so you'll have to navigate around that, but everything else is all quiet out there as far as the expressways are concerned. Off the expressways, we have fallen power cables blocking County Line Road between 87th and 83rd Street from last night's storm. And then west of there, it looks like Lamont Road between 83rd and Plainfield is closed due to storm damage with power lines down. And just west of there, Woodridge Drive between 83rd and 75th is closed due to the storm damage. So major damage going all the way down 83rd Street, it looks like, out in the western suburbs. So keep that in mind. But everything else all quiet. Weather today, mild temperatures, cloudy, a high of just 70 today is our second day of summer. Yesterday was our first day of summer. Right now it's overcast and 67 going up to a high of 70. For our Phoenix listeners, it's cooling off a little bit there too. Still hot, but better than 120. Sunny with a high of 109 today. Right now it's clear and 89. In sports, the Cubs avoided a sweep. They still have not been swept all season in a three-game or more series. They beat the Marlins yesterday 2-0. Alec Mills was very good. Craig Kimbrell got the save, and the Cubs lose 2 of 3, but win the final game of the series 2-0.
They're outscored, what, like 25-4, and they won a game?
That's right. The White Sox were blown out again yesterday, losing to the Astros 8-2. It was not a good four-game weekend for the Sox. They lost 8-2 yesterday. On Saturday, the White Sox lost 7-3. On Friday, the White Sox lost 2-1. That was the close game. And then on Thursday, I believe they were blown out again. On Thursday, they lost 10-2. So they were competitive in one of the four games, lost all four. The Cubs were competitive in one of their three games.
Are there two grumpy old managers that hate each other more than Dusty Baker and
Tony La Russa?
Tony La Russa.
They've hated each other for 30 years.
Yeah.
Gotta love it. So we usually take our Monday morning look at the Major League Baseball standings, which we'll do right now. Both teams are still in first place in spite of not a great week this past week. Sox have lost 4 in a row, but they're still 2.5 up on Cleveland in the AL Central. White Sox are 43-29. Cubs have lost 5 of their last 7, but they're still in first place, tied with Milwaukee atop the NL Central, 4 up on the Reds and the Cardinals, who are tied for third place in the NL Central. Diamondbacks have lost 17 in a row. That's just unbelievable to me. And they're 20-53, worst team in baseball. They're now 26.5 games back.
Is every player got his ear to the thing hoping he got traded?
They have to be just dying to get out of there. And it's 115 degrees every day, and you're getting your brains beat in every single game. They got to be dying to get out of there. Lastly, Chief, NBA basketball, the Phoenix Suns played game one of the Western Conference Finals, and they played without Chris Paul, their star player, who's on the COVID protocol list. Even though he was vaccinated, he had a positive test, and apparently he has to miss some time. But he missed game one, but the Suns won anyway. They beat the Clippers in game one, 120-114, and they lead that best of seven game series 1-0. On the Eastern Conference side, the Hawks won game 7 over number 1 seeded Philadelphia. So the Atlanta Hawks, the 5 seed, are in the Eastern Conference Finals. I don't think anyone saw that coming. And they'll take on the Milwaukee Bucks.
Did you see that game?
I did. Who won their game 7 in overtime.
You can say what you want about Ole defense during the season, but there were bodies flying in that game.
Oh, in the playoffs, it's serious.
NBA
playoffs are very enjoyable. I think you, Kevin Durant scores like 50 points, which is, I think, the most ever in a game 7. And they still lose, but it's a terrific game. He makes an unbelievable shot at the end of regulation to send it into overtime, and then just kind of ran out of gas. Both teams are just going at each other for 50. What'd they say? Half of the starters between the two teams played over 50 minutes.
Like they
didn't even come out of the game.
They didn't even come out of the game. It was what's his name? The guy who's the big stud on Milwaukee?
Giannis.
He was like, every time there was a timeout, the guy's got his hands on his knees. He's sucking air.
Oh, yeah. They just everything's on the line. Game 7, just going at it. And, a lot of people are turned off by the NBA regular season because guys are taking time off and there's a lot of the politics and all of that. And I get that. I mean, the Bulls haven't been relevant in a while, and I think that factors into it as well. But if you're looking for entertainment, the playoffs and the NBA are spectacular because they're the best athletes in the world, and they're going as hard as they can. And it's pretty fun to watch.
Well, remember the line in Airplane, the funny one? Well, the airport was a serious one.
Yeah, Airplane.
The captain, who actually was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, obviously, said, "Hey, my dad says you loaf it going down." I used to play in a lot of leagues like you, maybe. I didn't have big guys around me like you guys. You do. So I was the big guy. I tell you what, nothing is more. They say, what's about basketball? It's all about running. You can run all you want, but it's the leaning and pushing somebody at each end, and then running and doing it on the other end is the part that.
Yep.
And you wonder why does a guy in condition, you could be some bump and say, "God, this guy Giannis, and he needs to like work out more." No, he doesn't. When you start pushing back and forth against guys that big, that's like running a play as a line. You're almost being like a football lineman at one end, and then sprinting 20 yards and then doing it on the other end.
Yeah, and Giannis is like 7 feet, 265 yeah. with like 0% body fat.
Yeah.
That guy's like a Greek god. But I tell you, he's actually from Greece.
I was so happy to see those guys beat the made-up team out of...
I was too.
Especially with the Russian mob owns the team, or is that fair to say? They built, isn't that who owns
I think they did at one point. I don't know if they still do.
They still do. But anyway, Jan, how are you?
Tom, I'm good. How about you?
Pretty good. We're just talking softball for a second, but I want your vote on this. We had first year we're playing among Greenwood, and we were not as good as these other teams. Matty, there's a team called the Classic Auto Rebuilders. I remember them to this day. And these guys, I mean, they're obviously a very blue-collar team with all the weighted bats and all the stuff, which nobody would even want to swing now. And their team uniform was like the wife beater, because they were all so buff. And you know, we're talking about 2 days in the, you know, two games in the sun, you know. So I mean, these guys are all, you know, perfect. It looked like they could have a Mr. Universe thing in their bench, right? And then we, of course, look like a bunch of schlumps. Well, our pitcher, who is pretty good, doesn't show. So we're trying to figure out who the hell's going to pitch. So I say, okay, I'll pitch.
So what position were you playing before you were a pitcher?
I was first baseman.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Actually, Kevin and I used to, with a doubleheader, we'd play one game at first, and then we'd catch the other game.
Okay.
You know, I was never an outfielder or anything like that, but I was a pretty good first baseman, and Kevin was probably a little better. But the anyway, so the so I give up 4 home runs in a row, right? I mean, I'm talking about if there was a space station, those guys would have seen him flying by. We're talking serious home runs. And so my buddy goes, hey, you're horrible. Get out of there and let me pitch. So he walks 3 guys on 12 pitches. And on the next pitch, he grooves one, and that guy loses. And I'm like, which is worse? I think the outfielders probably thought that he was better than me, but because they only had to chase one of them. But
I think I would take the opposite. I would much rather make them earn it and hit 4 straight home runs than walk the bases loaded and then one guy hits a home run.
God, that ball went so far; it might still be in the air. But let's just say we didn't belong on the field with those guys. That was our first year. And it was bad. It was like
my money would be on Utah.
Well, I did learn after a while, but those guys were still pretty powerful. You know, you have some bad guys, Matty, when you walk out and everybody's got the hardball bat that's drilled on the end and filled with lead and stuff. You
yeah.
know, it's bad. Anyway, Jana, how are you?
I'm okay. Had a pretty good weekend.
Well, you're lucky. Don't come into the South Loop on Saturday. You're gonna
God. This is the creepiest stuff. That stabbing, you know, on South Wacker the other, you know, Friday, Saturday, it's just unbelievably horrific. I mean, that's everybody's nightmare. Walking around to be attacked from behind.
Did the guy even take her purse?
No, apparently not. And you know, everybody that I saw covering the story is this, you know, this homeless encampment right there is hardly a new story. And it has been other stuff that's happened there, but you got people lurking unseen in the bushes there. I know right where this happened, and I mean, it makes me think twice now about walking alone and anywhere. Especially in the South Loop, but you get to the fringes of the loop, like, you know, west of Wells or south of Jackson, and like, it's not worth it, really.
Well, what about 100 West Adams? I mean, it's right in front of the that's not the fringe.
Didn't that happen in a hotel or something?
Wasn't it? I thought it was in, they were in the street looking for the stuff yesterday.
And everything else. I couldn't quite follow that story. It sounded like it, you know, is that the old Midland Hotel or some one of those, you know, boutique hotels.
Is that the Berghoff's right there, right? It's got to be between the Berghoff and in the Italian Village.
Well, the Italian Village is Monroe. This could be.
Well, here's another one, 700 West Evergreen. That's a decent area, or was. I mean, I don't. But I'm going to say that there's a lot of homeless people down here that you know are trying to get some money on the expressways, and I've actually befriended 2 or 3 of them. I don't see any of those guys running behind somebody and stabbing somebody just for laughs. I mean, I just don't. I mean, that's not every one of these guys has a story about why they don't have a job or they used to when they got laid off. And I mean, I'm not saying that it didn't happen. I mean, I don't know anything about the story, but to think that these homeless groups are all of a sudden a danger to everybody being stabbed. I think that's a reach.
Well, I think you have to factor in mental illness and drugs. Because
yeah,
there's a tremendous overlap with homelessness. There always has been, but I think now you've got a sort of an incorporated sense that homeless people have a stake in the city, and it isn't about taking care of them. It's about letting them decide how they take care of themselves, which is a horrible policy. But if that seems to be the, you know, live and let live attitude, and you can't then really monitor unless you've got a dedicated police staff that's focused on that, which I'm sure we don't, to look at people who are clearly off the grid now, who are, you know, psychotic, what, off their meds, on the wrong meds, on too many meds, on whatever drugs, and nobody is keeping track of them, nobody is worrying about them, nobody is asking other people about them. They know they exist, and they know that, you know, they can be dangerous. It's always been true, but you never let these people kind of fend for themselves and expect them to police themselves in a way that you and I would expect to be policed. So I think we've asked for trouble, and we're getting it in spades now.
Well, an online search shows the woman has recently been a criminal justice doctoral candidate in Maryland, and she gets stabbed in Chicago street on a Saturday afternoon. God's
what a
sake.
Loss. I mean, it's,
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's everybody's worst nightmare, whether you're a man or a woman or young or old or whatever, to be ambushed that way. So.
The more you...
You don't think she was down there, like, studying the homeless encampment, do you?
I don't know.
The thing I heard on the news, and it was very vague, but it said she was here in Chicago on a personal, a family matter of some kind. It wasn't clear, you know, if she was just, you know, gawking around at Willis Tower, or if she had some, you know, place she was going to, you know, or whatever. But she wasn't from here, it sounded like, so.
Well, as a person who rails like a, you know, sings like a, not like a bird, like a coyote all the time about money that we waste, right, and what we're doing with these helicopter money and all this stuff. You know, it's so bizarre, Jen and Maddie. I don't, when you talk about stuff like this, and I mean, every day, I think all of us who do this show learn something, and that's why I like to get up in the morning and do it. To me, it's like going to college again in terms of how much you learn. But I don't get how we seem to have an immense amount of money to throw at some people. Like, we're paying the, you know, United Airlines, God knows, what's that guy's paycheck a week, even though they didn't have anybody flying there for a while. And, you know, I'm sure we kept paying the guy at Boeing, even though he's got 400 and some planes sitting on the ground. But what do you think the cost would be? Is we're paying people $300 a week to stay at home, so nobody can even hire anybody. Well, it's, you know, it's a little unfair, but there's a lot of people that are doing that, are taking advantage of that. Now, of course, they're not, they, you know, other people seem to think they have a right, they can hire somebody for $10. But how is it, out of all this money that we just print and don't, what would be the total cost of every day showing up and taking 500 of these guys, let's say 15 bus loads to some place, be it a forest preserve, be it something, pay everybody $15 an hour to plant new trees, to do this, to do something else, give everybody a shower, and get them the hell out of this homeless stuff, have a place where they can stay for, you know, $20 a night or something, or $40 a night, that, you know, maybe it's an abandoned school or something. How is it we can't spend, what would that cost, Jen? A couple hundred grand? I mean, what are we doing? I'm not saying we can do this for every single homeless person, but we're just going to let it all go? I mean, we're not going to do anything when we can't wait to shove money at other people? I mean, what are we talking about? I mean,
yeah, it's pretty disgusting. My uncle, you know, was a Chicago cop. He worked loop traffic. You know, his corner was Clark and Madison, but he'd worked other places. This is in the 50s and 60s. And I've kind of studied, you know, from talking to other people who had family members who were loop traffic cops, and there was always a homeless problem downtown, and there was always, you know, crazy people kind of wandering around, and that's why they had traffic cops, because my uncle got to know all these people, and when he saw somebody or saw somebody new hanging out, you know, panhandling, whatever, he kind of get the story, where'd you come from, and what do you need, you know, where are you going tonight, and this was kind of his job to keep the corner controlled. I mean, it was not so much, you know, that they rounded them up and imprisoned them, but they kind of knew about them, and they'd get, you know, people involved, social services, the priests at St. Peter's Church, whatever, to kind of like look out for these people, because they were a disaster waiting to happen if somebody didn't look out for them. And, you know, my uncle would, you know, give him a couple bucks, whatever, get him in a flea bag hotel for the night, someplace where they wouldn't be out on the street. And it was all about keeping not just the corner presentable, but, you know, safe for everybody. It was community policing, I think, at its best. And I'm sure there was payoffs and corruption, like there always was, you know, taking bribes or whatever, little stuff for parking privileges and things. But on the whole, it kept the loop functioning. And it dealt with the problem at a very grassroots level, and I think it was a lot more compassionate than what we do now.
Well,
we just, you know, ignore it completely.
When I first came down here, there were homeless people, but I'm going to say the average age had to be in the 50s. There were some people who never made it back mentally from Vietnam. There was a lot of that stuff going on, and virtually everybody you could see had some kind of a mental issue. And a lot of those guys ended up, I won't say being put back, but they kind of, I don't know, some of them escaped from Tinley or whatever, but, I mean, at least there was a place to do some kind of service for these guys. I mean, there was a mental health place, right? And, now I don't know, but now these guys are, instead of them being way older than me with a horrible life behind them,
they're younger.
These guys are all young. And some of them, even couples, for God's sake. I mean,
yeah.
It's like
nuclear families.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm like, it's a whole different, I mean, these are people that actually could do and probably would like to do some kind of a day's work. But how do we forget, how do we walk by all these people in a rush to give other people money? I'm not into throwing money around. Everybody knows that or listens to the show. But if we're going to do it, I mean, somewhere, I'm going to have to see if I can find it. It's got to be online someplace. I should get it and maybe send it out to our, or at least our contributors. I think it died in one of the floods in my parents' basement. Welfare is not only for the poor, and it just basically talked about how rich people basically get most of the welfare. I mean, you know, the biggest one is Social Security, which is welfare. It's a tax system and welfare. They don't match up. It's not an insurance system. If anybody thinks they are, you're smoking something. The crinkly cigarettes. But, I mean, the fact is, people that have money last longer, on average, right? So that's the single biggest. Plus, you're not going to find any of these homeless people getting new hips and new knees on the government at age 75. They're not going to be around when they're 75. I mean, who's kidding who, right? So, I mean, I don't see how, you know, minimally, and again, I don't want to take anybody's money and throw it at everybody, because I always think my money's part of it. But I don't see how there isn't some kind of a pilot program with 50 people this summer. We've got school buildings we can't wait to close, right? They all have shower facilities. How do we not, you know, bring somebody out? Plus, every forest preserve could use some work. I mean, it isn't like the parks can't use some work, or the railroads it's not like there isn't stuff to do, John. And, you know, and we're talking about groups that we'd be happy to go work for 10 to 12 bucks an hour, right?
Yeah.
I don't see any at all movement like that whatsoever. Do you? I mean, the only thing we've got is private places.
It's never in the discussion at all. You wouldn't, unless you went out and walked around yourself, you would never know there was such a problem in any newspaper, listening to any TV news. It's not talked about. It's not discussed. But it's part and parcel now of city life, and it certainly isn't just Chicago. And Chicago probably has, if anything, you know, kept the problem under closer wraps than elsewhere.
I'm going to say our winters kept it under closer wraps. We didn't do anything.
Yeah, well, that too. Yeah.
But anyway, so John, I was actually at my nephew's birthday party yesterday, and one of the guys there was asking me about, and I heard just a little bit about it. You know, who's buying up all these houses? Now, we've talked on the show before that this is kind of an elite group that gets land, you know, I'll take an example going back a long time. When I was at the University of Chicago, they were in like a really horrible neighborhood, right? And so was DePaul, right? So their solution was to take the 200-year plan, and anything that was available around the school, they essentially bought, right? The idea being, and it's not something you and I could do because you might be 50 years away from it being worth something, or never. But the universities, I mean, how much does University of Chicago own in that neighborhood now?
Phenomenal.
You know, incredible amount. And so did DePaul. They just happened to, everything they bought 30 years later is gold, right?
They got Loop Investments now, yeah, too. You know, the Paul Samuel, the old Goldblatt store, the Davis store on State Street there. I mean, that's a major building. I mean, they're a landlord now to a lot of city offices, and so they've had to kind of diversify into becoming real estate, you know.
Well,
more than educational institutions to keep afloat, I think.
I have as you know, I have no issue with the. Where is it that says that the churches don't pay taxes? Is that in the Constitution? Where is that?
I think it's in our state constitution.
I mean nationally, but they don't pay taxes.
I think it's got to be a national policy that charitable organizations, religious groups do not pay, how they handle their taxes when it comes to their services, but certainly their real estate is exempt.
Well, I always have, obviously both of us are graduates of Notre Dame, which is a lot different place now than when you and I were there, so I won't go into that, but I don't have any problem with Sacred Heart Church not paying taxes. Now, as to whether you should be able to run a professional football team out of there and not pay taxes, I'm on the other side of that one, although I'm sure that they'll probably, destine me to hell or something for saying that. But how does DePaul buy the Goldblatt building and start renting out the people? Are they're total? I mean, to me, that's a commercial operation. That has nothing to do with, the Almighty God and having a church for people who can go worship. They're way beyond that. I mean, is there no taxes whatsoever on that?
No. I mean, it's the same thing with Northwestern owns, the Continental Bank building, the one on LaSalle Street, across from the Federal Reserve. That's prime LaSalle Street property, but it's, Northwestern University is the landlord. They don't pay taxes.
Well, how do we have, how many, in your estimation, how many serious buildings, when you and I were growing up, Goldblatt's obviously was a store. I mean, Continental Bank was the biggest bank in the city. How many of these buildings are off the rolls now? There's got to be 15 of them.
Oh, yeah, the Continental Bank building, I think, has been off the rolls since the 20s. Might be before the Depression, when Northwestern acquired it.
Really?
It goes back quite a ways. And certainly there's been an increase. I would venture to guess, though, that probably 15% to 20% maybe of Loop property is really off the tax rolls now. Maybe more. I might be way off, too. I haven't really studied.
Well, you look at how many Columbia College has.
I would bet just because there's been an explosion of, the Art Institute, Columbia College, all these places, Roosevelt University expanding, for housing and stuff. They were never residential schools by any stretch, and they've all become residential schools, and that means acquiring property downtown for dormitories and, student services and everything else. So I suspect that there's quite a bit of it now that we don't even know about. You really have to dig to find it.
Well, when we were at the Irish, room and board was like $1,200, and you slept on an army bed with an army blanket. The place was 80 years old. They're charging $16,000 for room and board at Northwestern now. I mean,
right.
Come on.
I remember, Tom, yeah, we had maid service.
For 2 years. They're paying these women, Maddie, $40 a week, and then they fired them. It was too much money. Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
So then who cleaned up?
They gave you new sheets during the week.
Good question.
They gave you new sheets every week.
Do they burn the old ones?
When you got four guys in a room or in three little rooms or three guys in a room, I mean, to have somebody come in once in a while and make sure the place isn't falling apart isn't a bad idea. And what do the ladies work, 6 hours a day? They're all these old Polish ladies from South Bend.
Oh, yeah.
And then they canned them all.
It's crazy.
It's unbelievable. And the tuition is, and that's when the tuition was $3,000 and room and board was $1,000. And now it's 16 or something. Well, the tuition's 55 and room and board's like 15 or 20, 15, 16. And you can't afford to mate.
They just give you apparently a set of clean sheets every week. You figure it out.
We both have a mutual friend that never once changed his. I was pretty meticulous about it, but then, I was.
The guy down the hall from me freshman year had a big iguana in a glass cage, which, of course, you weren't supposed to have, but it got out one time, and the maid went in to make up the bed, and this thing came out at her.
Oh, my God.
She refused ever to go back in the room.
Well, the two idiots down the hall from me stole one of the lab rats, the white ones. And the maid spotted the rat, and she killed the thing. And the guy's like, you killed a lab rat. And the maids whacked the rat and killed him.
Oh, my God.
But, I mean, they got 6 hours. They didn't give them 8 hours. I mean, it was whatever. But anyway, we're talking about people acquiring property in the South Side. There was a big influx of this, Jan, when we were allegedly going to have the Olympics, right? Everybody was buying all that property around Washington Park. And
the Michael Reese Project, remember, yeah. Daley knocked the thing down, and the city just sat on that until just recently, when they now have a redevelopment plan that... They sold it off to some consortium of developers.
Yeah, good luck with that. When are they going to start with that?
10 years of just somebody waiting for the thing to become available.
It's like the project by me. When's that thing going to start? I mean, we don't need... I don't think the city's growing. I mean, I don't know what are they going to
need. The Lincoln Yards?
Yeah, Lincoln Yards. But anyway, there's for those that don't know, there's all kinds of slimy stuff that goes on in Chicago where, you know, people can get lots out of taxes and this and that and the other thing. But it's always a group of, seemingly, sometimes the names change, but it's always a group of three or four people, right? It's not like, maybe with you on my side, because you know some of this stuff, but the chance of Matt and I walking into City Hall and saying, hey, where's the vacant property I auctioned this morning? I got a few bucks in my pocket. I want to go bid. They're not going to tell you where the room is, right?
Oh, of course not.
I mean, but my, one of our mutual friends said a lot of people from Ireland were buying a whole bunch of stuff up on the South Side. I mean, we've got, you know, there's infrastructure, there's L's and trains and stuff and expressway. So, I mean, it's not like, you know, it's almost like the Bronx in that regard. North Manhattan, Harlem, that all of a sudden became, not all of a sudden, over a period of time became gentrified. I don't know. Unless the city's growing, I don't see it pushing that way. But it might, not in my lifetime. So, but these people, so now BlackRock has been rumored to be buying places up, but they're buying actual houses, right?
Right, and I found a Slate article that was talking about BlackRock not just buying any houses, but buying the houses with the most possibility for wealth building if you were a young homeowner just starting out, so that the properties that were built after 1970 or whatever need work, but they're affordable, at least they were before BlackRock got into the bidding war for them. But these are the places that you actually could probably make money on, ultimately, if you were a family. But once those properties are taken out of the inventory for money makers, it makes it tough, of course, for people just in there to buy a house to live in to make any money over the long haul. It looks to me like it's a long-term design to fulfill what, remember those nightmare things we saw about the World Economic Forum? You know, it's 2032, I don't own anything, and I've never been happier. This mantra that, private property is not something you can bank on as always being a possibility or even desirable.
Well, it depends on the price. It's like, right. Like a stack.
Well,
you buy it at 20.
Tenant, and, of course, Pullman provides the best example for that. The town of Pullman surrounding the plant. It was an ideal thing for a while, but when Pullman got rid of the jobs for these people, but didn't decrease their rent and increased it, and you couldn't buy your groceries except where the company accepted your scripts. So you had these people by the throat, and of course it resulted in a violent strike, and eventually the town was just unwound. I don't know if there'll be that kind of power to unwind something once it gets enough steam up. I'm eventually going to see people accepting the fact that they're going to have to rent for the rest of their lives and for the rest of their family's history, and that'll be okay with them. And there won't be many options, and there won't be any way of busting the system. So,
well, there are times when you want to rent and times you want to buy, which is...
Right, and you should always have the option.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
I just think now it could be, we've talked before on the show about it, was a strategized way of changing neighborhoods for the, whatever direction you want to push it in for development or residential or commercial purposes. That's one thing, but just to take these out of the stream of affordable housing for people who have the money and the desire to buy a house to live in and forcing them to rent if they want to live close to whatever job they have, that's a whole different thing. And,
well, it depends on how you do it. I mean, I have a client at one time, I don't know, whoever thinks I know everybody, unfortunately I don't, but this guy, I don't know if he died or was not feeling so, whatever it was, But he had a company that owned, they were sending me, you know, we're talking about an Excel sheet. I'm going to say, Jan, 300, 400, 500 maybe properties on the south side, houses that this guy owned and had them all rented. I mean, for God's sake. I mean, how big is the organization just to go collect the rent, for God's sake? Or anybody, okay, the toilet doesn't work. That's going to happen in, you know, 50 houses in a month. You know, I mean, I don't know what kind of operation the guy was running to maintain all this stuff. But, I mean, the guy said, well, who would you get to buy it? And they're all spread around. But they were mostly in, you know, on the south side. But they weren't in Inglewood. They were on, like, East 87th and areas where most of the areas were pretty decent. But, you know, how the hell are you going to even go inspect, you know, 500 houses to see whether you want them or not? But it comes down to what is your time frame and what is your view of Chicago in the future. I mean, if you think that over a period of time, some mayor somewhere or some people, that in the next 35, 40 years, that those areas, there's going to be jobs, there might be some manufacturing, although it doesn't seem like we're going to get that back. But by and large, you're talking about Chicago being a growing community over the next generation. You know, at some price, this is a great buy. And as for how you get rid of them, I mean, when you bring a renter in, you might say, okay, if you put down 3 months deposit, and by the way, you don't wreck the place, I might give you an option to buy the thing after 3 years. I mean, you can do. There's a lot of things you can do if things are going good, right? And all of a sudden, the people have a job and they're paying the rent and they're saying, hey, you know, I wouldn't mind owning a place someday. Well, fine. Here's your price. You know, the going rate is going to be $250, but since you've been a tenant for 2 years, you can have it for $230. I mean, there's all kinds of things you can do to make money and be magnanimous at the same time. Because obviously, you're not just doing that to be magnanimous. You're doing it because the guy thinks he might own it someday, so he's going to take care of it, right? I mean, it all works together. But if the whole area keeps getting worse and worse and worse, and it's nothing but gang-ridden and the property value drops, you don't want to own 500 houses down there. But if it turns out that it's good, but how do you make that call? I mean, even if you had money.
You know, I think it's, if you have a place like BlackRock or any institutional investor, that the sky is the limit when it comes to what size portfolios they can acquire and have the management services rolled into everything else. You're also talking about eventually private security, too. And what you may see happen, and you know, I can't predict this, but if you do this in a neighborhood that is spinning out of control because, you know, they're controlled by gangs, the city is throwing its hands up, not knowing what to do next to make them livable or attractive to people. You bring in a BlackRock type thing that acquires it, manages it, and polices it, you know, and tells, you know, the CPD will handle this. Then they got, like, you know, Rio de Janeiro or Sao Paulo, you know, and that isn't really a model that the United States has ever found very attractive, and nor would the average homeowner want to live in such a neighborhood because it's ruled by.
Well, you're assuming that they're buying stuff. The stuff I wasn't trying to sell. I just looked at because I was never going to be able to do it. But the stuff I was looking at was all over the South Side, so. There's no way you could have done that. I mean, there was, you know, one at 64th and Damon. I'm going, well, that's worth nothing. You know, here's one in Hyde Park. Well, that's worth something. They were so far away. There's no way you could have policed them yourself.
Certainly with not a little effort, you could do this in a more concentrated way.
Oh yeah, yeah.
By block after block, and I don't, you know, I would think that if you were a BlackRock and you think there's money to be made here, you have to protect your investment somehow. You can't just let it be frittered away by, you know, random shootings and horrible schools and everything else. If you want people with kids going to school living in these houses, you'll do something else. And it may be a way of the city and you know, bigger operations finally recognizing and admitting they can't do this job anymore, and they're going to leave it to private investors to figure it out, and, you know, we'll go concentrate on something else that isn't so difficult for us. Then you got to, I don't know what a city like that looks like, but it isn't like a neighborhood system that Chicago has looked like. It will be enclaves of you know, various political organizations or private businesses running things, and everything will be a gated community unto itself, and you won't speak to the people across the street in the other gated community or have any.
Yeah, it's not the city I envision.
No, that to me is, you know, it's hideous vision, but it looks like that seems to be an option now. I mean, I don't want to seem dire in my predictions or, you know, doomsayer, but it may reach a point where what is the alternative? If you can't make a go of it in the traditional fashion, then you look for untraditional
solutions. Well, when there's three murders in broad daylight in the last 10 days within 1,000 yards of the office, it's real hard to have a big vision of West Englewood.
Oh, absolutely.
Just saying. And yet, you know, so I was telling Maddie, I went to South yesterday, and, well, of course, a lot of things about the city I can't even fathom, Jen. And I don't know, you know, all I can do is tell the listeners how things are. I'll say, here's the way it was handled in this case, and here's the way it was handled in another case. I can just point out the differences. I mean, I don't know which is better or which is worse. I honestly don't. I have a strong opinion, but when we were sophomores in college, somewhere in there, maybe fresh, only a freshman, where they were the first time Matty DeRyan opened in 62, I'm going to say in, well, so we would have been a freshman in 72, right, or 71. After 10 years, whoever designed it decided that, well, the local lanes were going to be all trucks, right? Well, the trucks had to be in the local lanes. Somehow or another, they didn't realize, or they messed up by how many trucks they thought they were going to have as a percentage. So anyway, the locals were pretty beat up because what they used, 8 inches of concrete, Jen, and they needed 10 or 12 for the amount of, anyway, so they're going to bust up the whole local lanes of the Ryan and redo the local lanes with a much stronger base. So this was going to be one of those summers. So I kept going with my buddy, and we kept trying to get a job because, I mean, they were paying $7-$8 an hour, you know, plus a lot of overtime. This was in 1971, for God's sake. Might even been before we were in school. It might have been after senior year. And, of course, we never got the job. There was a, you know, gamesmanship on the job thing. Minority hiring, but it wasn't any minority. It was if you were part of a coalition, which meant you had to give the preacher or the alderman like $1 an hour kickback. You know, so it wasn't just black people, which I certainly would understand not getting a job, and black guy with a family certainly deserved it ahead of me. I had no problem with that. But then when he had to kick back a buck to some schmuck, I had a problem with that.
Wasn't doing any work at all.
Yeah, it wasn't. So as you can tell, I still have that. I remember all these things. I should just forget them, but I can't. Anyway, that was 24/7. Now this thing at Burn Interchange, if you drive in here in the weekends or any day, it's a quagmire. It's the biggest traffic jam back and forth other than maybe the Boston Tunnel. John, Maddie and I drive in here in the morning and there's nobody working. I drive home, there's nobody working. This is a massive public works project that they can't work as many hours as I do. I mean, what are we doing? I mean, I'm not saying which is better. I'm just saying the contrast is dramatic between 24/7 and whenever we feel like it. We're talking about a 12-year plan on this thing. I mean, how does that run? How does anybody think? I mean, look how long. I mean, in the meantime, we're trying to get people's jobs. Why aren't there two shifts, for God's sake? I mean, what am I missing?
Well, remember when they built the L line down the middle of the Dan Ryan in the 60s, and they left the space in the median for it. I mean, this was part of the plan from day one that there would be a rapid transit line down the center of it, and it opened 7 years after the expressway opened. I was a senior in high school, I think, when they opened what's now the Red Line on the south side. It didn't take as long as the Burn Interchange has taken. This is from, you know, from the Loop to 95th Street. Now they're talking about extending that to 130th Street out to Old Gull Gardens. Does anybody think this will happen in the next two lifetimes at the rate
No.
they're going?
Oh, it's unbelievable.
Sorry. They better be planning out something other than Old Gull Gardens being there by the time this L line gets finished to serve it, because it won't be Old Gull Gardens. It will have deteriorated and been knocked down, and something else will be built there.
Well,
that's how long you have to think now. It's ridiculous. But
well, Jen, you know I'm a trained bluff. Did he say bluff or buff? Anyway, a little bit of history. When the New York Central used to, their station was LaSalle Street, which is where the Rock Island is. In Pennsylvania, was Union Station. So when we had the Broadway Limited, which was the express train to New York, was the Pennsylvania, and then it was the 20th Century Limited, was the New York Central. And they both would leave downtown at the exact same time. and they'd meet at the Union Station in Inglewood, right? One on one track, right. One another. And there was a cross track there to where the New York Central, and then they would head basically side by side south through that whole area by the Skyway, and they'd split up in Indiana to the Pennsylvania tracks and the New York Central tracks. And so the train's coming out of Union Station, the freight's coming from that way. There was a big crossing of the rails, essentially, right at Inglewood. And as time went by and Rock Island had all these commuter lines, that became a big hang-up for the freight trains because the commuter train always had it right away. So it became a bottleneck. And so I'm going to say 20 years, 25, 30 years, they're talking about a flyover for the Rock Island so you wouldn't stop the freight traffic. I'm going to say it has to be at least 30 years, talking about it. Chicago's a bottleneck. Chicago's this. In the meantime, it's such a mess that the railroads end up having a massive switching yard in Joliet where they're just going to say, we're avoiding Chicago. We're not even coming in here. So the clearing yard, which used to make up like every freight train going each direction, right, is a shadow of its former self. And now the amount of trains going through this big old night bottleneck, less and less and less. So finally, about 10 years ago, they decided, well, let's actually build this thing. So they spent all this money and build the damn thing. I'm going to say, John, now that it's built, they don't even need it.
It's obsolete.
It's totally obsolete.
Obsolete before it opened.
Yeah, because we don't need it. We needed it 30 years ago. And if we would have had it, you might not even built the damn thing in Joliet, right, in these other areas outside the city. But now the city's abandoned on most of this stuff. There's still trains that come through here, but, I mean, we're out of our mind. I mean, it's the way we do these things. I mean, do you think that anybody who has to drive from the north side to the south side is going to stay doing that? I mean, if you like to play golf or something, I mean, you got to live in the South Loop. You can't live where I live and go through the city every day to a south side course. I mean, this is insane. And yet, they don't care how long it takes. Yeah? I mean, it's the same thing. We don't have any money for the homeless people. We don't have money for... We can't wait to get people back to work. Infrastructure. Put a second shift over here, for God's sake. I mean, I don't... Maddie, am I just an old guy grumbling, or is this stuff so obvious, and yet we don't do the obvious stuff? What am I missing?
We never do the obvious stuff.
But why? I mean, are these people that stupid? Or is the guy who's got the job just wants to push it off for 20 years because it's the rest of his life? He's going to retire when it's done. I don't, how much you want to bet? I'll bet you was it 5 hours more? Was that the bet? Five bucks?
I think they were dollar bets.
It was a dollar bet. Yeah. Okay. I'll bet you a buck that whenever this thing is done, when your kid you don't even have yet, Betty, he's 15 years old, I'll bet you that they get a bonus for being early. I'll bet you a dollar. I don't think you'll take that bet.
I bet you're right.
It's spectacular. Anyway, so, John, how does this, all the stuff we talk about, I mean, I do believe on the show, all this stuff affects something else. You can't expect people to put, you know, now a huge building down here has got to be pushing $1 billion, right? You can't expect somebody to do that when there's homeless people on the sidewalk and there's a murderer out front the door. You can't, the people across the street here, this is one of these clubs, everybody's going in there the other night and everybody's getting winded down. I mean, this is not how people live in a big city and want to invest there. It has nothing to do with whether, you know, they should be winding people down, not whether people should be pissed. I'm just saying, in my opinion, that doesn't all work together. You can't have people loving a congested area with all the bars and restaurants and people and pretty girls and nice guys and all the good stuff that goes with being in a place like that if people are afraid to be there. If the investment is not a good investment, if people can't make any money. I'm not talking about prodigious money like you get your nose up the ass of government like a lot of people have. I'm talking about regular investing money. How does somebody come to Chicago right now and say, boy, there's a nice piece of property. I'm going to build a condominium building or an apartment building or something and just going to make a bet on the future. How do you do that? I mean, I know how some people do it. You don't put up any of your own money. You get a bunch of investors and you get the security contract going forward and maybe the cable TV contract. So you're set for life and everybody else loses money. I mean, that you can always do. You can always be a scam man, right? But I mean, to make a legitimate investment, how the hell do you do that right now?
Well, if you know the infrastructure, sewer, water, power, whatever else it takes to to dream up one of these projects, if it's an office building or a subdivision or whatever, that's one thing. But you factor into it also the hassles that people who are actually going to be occupying this thing have to go through. So if they have to drive through the burn interchange to get to it, or if they have to walk the streets and take their life in their hands to get to it, or if they are not safe in the place during working hours or at night because there's other people that are running the city around you, how does a developer factor that into the cost of doing business? It isn't a cost of doing business. It makes no sense to try to do business in an environment like that where there is nobody minding the store and nobody caring how any of these things get solved. So a developer, unless you're a BlackRock, I don't think there's much you can do to alter that. And maybe BlackRock's got some vision or some promise that they've been given that makes it attractive for them, and they can, bring some muscle to the table that you or I or even the city can't do. And I don't know if I like that picture that, is forming in my mind, but it certainly is how other cities around the world have solved it, when they've just spun out of control and you can't depend on an uncorrupt city government to protect you or a police force that isn't on the take. You do it then by, goon squads and, undercover espionage and everything else to keep the wrong people away from what you want, and you intimidate people. And certainly now, I don't see anybody really thinking that people are intimidated by the Chicago police or by Lori Lightfoot or by Kim Fox when it comes to deterring bad behavior. And I think
nobody's intimidated, but
it's just enabling it or encouraging it. So yeah. maybe BlackRock thinks here's an opportunity where we can show what's possible. I'm making it look like it's a policing opportunity really more than a housing.
Well, the last thing we need is...
I think they see it as a profit center only. They don't care about whether it's housing or something else so they can make money.
Well, it's one thing to do like the University of Chicago or DePaul. DePaul probably had to pay up more. Or if it was true that there was an Irish group that was... It's one thing to fall into the city politics, which if you and I would have tried to do this 30 years ago and started passing some money around, it's not like we couldn't get in over time. We could with the right law firm. If we had the idea that we're going to pick up, 1,000 lots on the south side for taxes or for this or that, and we're picking them up for, under a grand a throw, and we ended up, for $1 million plus legal fees, of course, and paying off some aldermen. If we could do that for, a couple of $1 million or $3 million, so we're into these lots for next to nothing. I mean, $3 million to a lot of people is, a pimple on the ass of an elephant, right? So that's one thing. But I think BlackRock is actually buying regular houses.
Oh, yeah. And
that's a big difference.
It's probably, it isn't just like en masse. They're buying, this block and that block and whatever else en masse. But they're building a block of properties. And, it isn't very difficult to imagine how they could convert that kind of gradual increase of their visibility in any neighborhood into political power, too, because pretty soon they'll be in a better position to control the aldermanic races and the committeeman races in those wards where they focused on than the machine, the Democratic Party, will be able to. Or they'll have to be reckoned with in a way that, makes them a real player. Just as an anecdote, I mean, for years I used to go down to Hyde Park every day on my way to work and wait for a colleague of mine who lived in Hyde Park, and I'd ride with her, out to the Prairie State where I taught, and I'd stand at the corner of 57th and Lake Park right at the metro station there. And over the course of doing this for about 10, 12 years, I saw at least 6 or 7 incidents of somebody being arrested right in front of me at that corner, and it was always the University of Chicago private security forces that were doing it.
Jack, can they arrest somebody? A private security
force? Yeah, they can detain them. The police would eventually show up. I kind of watched these things unfold all the time, but they were doing the pursuit. They'd come up, they'd block the path of some car, they'd order the person out of it. And I thought, when I started hearing the defund the University of Chicago police force a couple of years ago, I thought, well, goodbye University of Chicago, goodbye Hyde Park. If you lose that, you lose any reason to hang around Hyde Park, I think. The Chicago police aren't, they're doing a lot, don't get me wrong, but they're not doing it all, nor could they. And I just think that this is if you wanted to make these neighborhoods better, you would show up the city in ways that the city has shown itself vulnerable. It doesn't have the wherewithal. It doesn't have the focus. It doesn't have the people. And it's got a police force that's clearly not enough. And you got people retiring faster than you're hiring them.
I have a question. I don't want to spend too much time on this because I have a couple more questions for you. But I don't. In Notre Dame, and they had some issues with this. It's somewhat of a combined place. Plus, it actually is a village, right? Or it has its own postal code.
Municipality, yeah. It's incorporated, yeah.
So I can see where the Notre Dame police can detain somebody. The University of Chicago, though, is just, there is no gate on the University of Chicago. It's just on a bunch of city streets. How does the University of Chicago police get the ability to arrest somebody on 57th Street?
Well, it's within the jurisdiction of what they, I think, deem the campus, perimeter to be. Prairie State, where I taught, had an armed security force, a police force. They could arrest somebody in the atrium of the building. They could go out in the parking lot, detain them.
Yeah, but how do they arrest somebody on Route 30?
Well, if they can't, if they're not permitted to do that, of course they can't do it. And I think it's very restricted geographically where they can operate and what they can do within those boundaries. But clearly, 57th and Lake Park would be within the Hyde Park community's vision of what the University of Chicago's extent is. And there was university property there. There were buildings that they owned. There was student housing. There was offices. It was sprinkled around. It wasn't all just like, you were in the middle of the Gothic buildings, over on Hutchinson Court. But there was university stuff going on all over the place. And I think that would be interpreted in the university sites as being fair game. If you're in this block, if you're in the 5600 block of Lake Park, we can patrol this with our own security people and we can make arrests as we deem fit. If we've got reports of somebody bothering the university, I would say thank God they had it, because
yeah.
Otherwise I don't think you'd get people who would want to live in Hyde Park for very long if they knew they had only the Chicago Police Department.
Oh, I would agree. Well, certainly on campus. I mean, all right, Jan, thank you very much. Next time, next week, let's talk a little bit about the Bears in Arlington and what I'm curious.
Lori Lightfoot's going to fall on her sword, I think.
Well, I'm also more. I was going to get into more of the. When you buy a totally unimproved piece of property like that, what does it cost to get water, sewer, and all that other stuff in there? I mean, compared to an improved piece, I mean...
I don't think Arlington Heights has any idea how much it's going to cost them.
Oh, well, yeah, well, that would be a problem. John, thank you. SP Futures up 16, NASDAQ Futures up 26. We're back, Mr. Mike Hart. He's going to tell
us... Jeff Joseph.
We have Jeff?
That's right.
Oh, good. Well, then we'll do that. We'll talk about why we flipped around last night. Jeff probably was right all over this. He's long spoo, I think. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 1475. I had them down 20, I believe, last night. NASDAQ futures up 23, and they were down. They were down as well, but I know the Dow was down over 200. Now it's up 182. This was a flip in the middle of the night. They were trying to bounce back from last week, which was pretty awful, especially if you're in the Dow stocks. DAX up 108, that's 0.7%. FTSE up 12, these guys were up more than the last time we did this. FTSE up 12.2%, CAC around up 17.3%. Asia, not so much. Nikkei down 953, that's 3.3%. They were down 4% at one point. Now, that's a lot. Shanghai up 4, so call that flat. They were the outlier, but the rest of the place, Hang Seng's down 312, that's 1.1%. As a way of review on Friday, not a good review. Dow's down 533. S&P 500 down 55. NASDAQ down 130. It was one of the first days I've seen in a while. I mean, I used to, well, whenever we had expirations like monthly, expiration used to be the day that, you know, that was my day in the OEX bit. But now expirations, we have three of them a week, and they don't seem to do much. But now Friday, there were puts that were 45 cents, closed a buck and a half, like 2 seconds later. So it was one of the first times you could have, if you could have bought them at 10 to 3, which is hard to do, and sell them after, you could have a decent afternoon, because we dove on the close, which is, you know, obviously not so good. Bonds, 1.46, actually up 1 basis point. The blend up 1 basis point, minus 0.19. So they're actually seem to have found a bottom here and creeping back towards zero at least a little bit. Japan, however, going the other way. They're down 2 basis points and minus 0.038. So that goes with their market being down heavy. UK is positive a basis point at 0.76. Oil is up 3 cents. Call that flat, 71.67. Brent same way, 73.48. Natural gas down 3 cents, 3.18. RBOB down a penny at 2.15. Gas was down like 15 cents, Matty. I didn't even fill up the Suburban. It was a 3.05. I put in like 20-some gallons. That's like a half a tank. So, but I mean, it's 3.27 last week, so it's down some. Gold up 7.60. Was up more earlier at 17.76. Nowhere near the 1900 it almost was last week. Silver unchanged now. It was up earlier, 25.97. Copper down 3 cents, 4.12. We've got crypto is down 2,700 at 32,547. China's intensifying their crypto mining crackdown is the headline there. What do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Still looking good so far on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. Absolutely no significant delays on the Edens or Kennedy. Same for the Eisenhower and Stevenson. We'll see some heavier traffic on the Stevenson as you approach the Dan Ryan due to the road construction there, but that's been going on for several months now. Dan Ryan, I-57 and the Bishop Ford are looking good too. Same for Lakeshore Drive in both directions. We do have some standing water in certain areas, especially in the side streets due to last night's storm. And as I mentioned last hour, running along 83rd Street in the western suburbs, looks like for several miles there's all kinds of blockage and closures due to fallen power lines. That has County Line Road between 87th and 79th Street closed, and then west of there it has Lamont Avenue between 83rd and Plainfield closed, and then just west of there looks like Janes Avenue between 83rd and 75th is closed. So that whole corridor there was greatly affected by the storms last night. But everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, cloudy skies, mild temperatures, a high of just 70. Right now it's partly cloudy and 67 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 109. Right now it's clear and 90. In sports, Cubs topped the Marlins 2-0, salvaging the final game of that three-game set. White Sox were swept in their four-game series against the Astros, losing 8-2 yesterday. Diamondbacks lost to the Dodgers 9-8. The D-backs have lost 17 games in a row. NBA basketball, the Suns were without Chris Paul, but still won Game 1 of the Western Conference Finals, topping the Clippers 120-114. Chief.
Did the Washington Generals even ever lose 17 in a row?
I don't know. I can't imagine playing any sport and losing 17 times in a row.
That's especially in baseball, you would think you'd have one good pitcher.
Right.
And the worst team I ever saw were the Phillies when Carlton was on there, and he won 28 games.
Right. He's every fifth day they won at least.
Yeah. Well, in those days it was four. But, Jeff, how are you?
I'm good, Chief. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Last night I was coming home from the south side, and I just got to the near north side, and I hear these pops. And it never even dawned on me, Jeff, after doing the show every day now for the last how many years. And I was relieved to see some fireworks going off on one side of the expressway. I just assumed they were gunshots.
Signs of life?
Yeah, I just assumed they were gunshots. And all of a sudden there were fireworks on. I was never so happy to that. What exactly do you do if you're driving along and you hear somebody shooting? You can't really well duck. You got to keep driving. What are you supposed to do?
Over my pay grade. I don't know. Just keep on driving.
Just keep on going. So,
I can figure. Speaking of driving, I was curious your thought on gas prices. Why the surge? I mean, the conventional talking points are that it's because of resurging gasoline demand because in a post-pandemic world as we come out of it, but remember those levels are so far below pre-pandemic. Why would that result in higher prices?
I actually think Jeff, out of all the stuff that we talk about, gas is probably one of the most competitive products there are. I mean, nothing else goes down in price ever, does it? I mean, I think we had some combination of the pipeline issue, increased world demand. When you say demand, the COVID actually dropped. I don't want to get too technical here, but there's a difference between demand falling and the quantity demand falling, right? I mean, if all of a sudden the price goes down and people buy more, the demand didn't go up. The quantity demand it did, because the demand is a curve, right? So COVID, I think, dropped the whole curve. People just weren't going anywhere.
Right.
And, I mean, I don't really know what would you say the normal price is? I mean, it's hard to tell right now, is it? I mean, what would you say? I mean, we were under $2 for a little bit in the middle of COVID. I don't think that was normal, do you? I mean,
the average U.S. Gas prices were, we just recently passed $3 per gallon for the first time since 2014. That was this past Wednesday. So, you know, I don't know where the average is. There's a range, but $3 has been a ceiling since 2014.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I've thought, I mean, God, Mandy and I have been doing a show for, when this all started, when we had the fracking brought things down to what, we got to 20, was it, where was our low tick in oil, 28? Mm-hmm. Something like that?
Yeah, right. 20,
I mean,
yeah, high 20s. Yeah.
I mean, I thought all along that if you were to ask me what the equilibrium price of oil, with all the countries doing all this weird stuff they do, and we get too much and too little, I'm going to say it's somewhere between 50 and 65, or maybe 50 and 70. I don't think it's 30, and I don't think it's 100, do you? I mean, I think this is kind of where we are on oil prices.
Yeah.
A sustainable number. And I think 70 is probably a little high, because I think we cut back on some of the on the rig counts and so forth, maybe more than we should have in the COVID, so we're playing a little catch-up. But when we get there, I think the number is somewhere around 55 to 60. What do you think?
That's probably right, around 50, well 50. You know, it might change under the new administration only because of, there was a certain kind of different regulatory attitude and a different regime favoring fossil fuels over others. So that might put some impact on prices. But generally speaking, I think that's about right.
So I think I
also think that this rise is, you know, we'll see prices fall below $3 in the next couple of weeks. The resumption of the Colonial Pipeline flow, you know, should make a difference, I would think.
If we're $60 a barrel, I think that puts us in what, the 270, 275, 280 range on gas? That I think is actually probably the number, if there is such a thing. I mean, are you way off on that?
Yeah, well, that sounds about right, but that wouldn't make sense in line of current prices and the price of oil.
Well, we're 70 now, and we're 320.
Yeah, that's right, and we're over three. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, the city's four. I mean, location, right, Jeff?
Sure. Yeah.
You remember that story about the city and their competitive pricing in the city? It's kind of somewhat of a fascinating. I don't know if take a second here because I want to suggest a couple topics for you for future magazines that you'll of course never do because it's probably very boring to people. But the city used to have. Remember when they had that Clark? You're a Northsider, so you probably there was a Clark refinery, at 127th and Kedzie in Blue Island, right? And it actually is a pipeline that terminates right there. So Clark had a few stations, but they also used to sell, you know, what do you want to call it, a one-off gas to like Ryan Gas and Gas for Less, and I think they might have even done Purple Martin, but they used to feed a lot of the independents. And there were a lot of independents in the Chicago area. Plus, you had a bunch of, you know, major gas stations. Well, ARCO wanted to buy Sinclair. Now, ARCO was like the Atlantic Richfield, for those of you who don't remember. They wanted to buy Sinclair, and they were like the seventh or eighth biggest oil company. They were like remember, was it the eight darlings? They were the big honchos in the oil industry. They were like the crummiest one. Them or Union 76, one of them. So they were going to buy Sinclair, and Sinclair had a presence in Chicago.
Okay.
And Diner of the Dinosaur. And so yeah. The antitrust people said, no, you can't do that because you'll be too concentrated in the Chicago area. They wouldn't have been concentrated at all compared to today's world. So they made Sinclair off their stations, and whoever bought them, was BP, looking for an entry into the Chicago area. Well, what it couldn't have been a year or two later, Jeff, BP buys ARCO. With all the stations they just bought and all ARCO stations, right? And if you remember back, the biggest retail group in Chicago was the Standard Oil of Indiana or Amoco. All right. So which is obviously they're in Whiting, Indiana. So they had more, there were more standard stations in Chicago than any place else. So then BP now buys Standard of Indiana or Amoco, right? So BP has now bought, first they got in because of Sinclair having too much of a presence with Sinclair and ARCO, which nobody cared about. Then they buy ARCO, then they buy Amoco. And then the Clark place closes, so now I challenge you to find an independent anywhere, right? I mean, is there anybody? Yeah. I don't think there is one. So you wonder why the city is $4 a gallon and the suburbs are $3.05, right? I mean, all these combinations that you and I talk to, it's not all up in the air ether kind of stuff. It's real money. I mean, I'm going to say those combinations probably have cost people in Chicago 20 cents a gallon for five decades. Well, that's a long time. That's a lot of money. Just saying.
Yeah, yeah. I remember that refinery, too, in Blue Island. It was next to Big Eisenhower High School, I think it was.
Yeah.
I remember being down there for an athletic tournament as a kid, and that was a dark spot that looked like kind of an Eastern Bloc area of Chicago.
Oh, yeah, it's a bad area.
That big Clark refinery down there. As I recall, there was some litigation from local residents, I think, that...
Well, they kept having so many fires. First, they said, we're not going to show up with our fire department unless you modernize this place. And finally, it was too much money to finalize. They said, screw it, and closed. But, I mean, yeah, the Blue Island Fire Department was there, like, all the time. Last thing you want to do, I think, as a fireman, is start putting a fire out in a refinery. I think it's above your pay grade, just a tad.
I would think.
How would you like that if your kid say, "What did you do today?" Well, we had a fire call to a refinery. You go, "You did what?" You'd say, "Get rid of that job." Anyway, so what's up? I'm going to suggest city financing and highway financing is a couple of, I wouldn't say the whole magazine, but a couple offshoots, because I don't think anybody understands any of it. I don't.
Highway financing is that's actually a good story, particularly based on what comes out of any type of infrastructure bill, you know, that might occur. I think that'll be an interesting story to fill in the blanks.
Do you think they're spending all the money now they're getting on tax on gas taxes for roads?
We know they're spending all the money. The question is on what?
Well, right. And if they're not spending it on roads, I have a feeling they're stealing from that trust fund. There's supposed to be a highway trust fund that is your gas tax, correct?
Yes, right.
But you would think that if they're not using it for roads, the first thing you would do is use the money that you're supposed to use for roads, you would think. But that would be you and me talking, and nobody's listening to us.
Yeah, there's such a unique opportunity to actually put together a real infrastructure bill. It's a shame that politicians on both sides choose to be so opportunistic about any legislation that should pass. A pure infrastructure bill would be such a good sign to the electorate that both parties actually want to get something done, when everyone knows and, you know, the infrastructure concerns are real and the jobs that it creates by having a bill. It's just everyone wants to add all their stuff into it, and that's why we sit, you know, looking at Joe Manchin every day.
Well, how many jobs did we create with this burn interchange project? There's nobody there. Just saying.
Yeah, well,
that's another story. When I say this,
the road.
When I say virtually. This, do we have? I don't have an idea. When the federal government talks about infrastructure, now don't the states? I'm not talking about interstate highways. I think that's pretty much all on the Fed, right?
Right.
I'm thinking it was the Dan Ryan comes through Chicago. There's got to be a matching piece somewhere from the state or the city. But maybe not. But then there's U.S. highways, there's state highways, then there's just regular streets. Is this infrastructure bill going to all of a sudden start paying for, like, state highways is a gift to the state, or are those roads going to still be crummy and the interstates are going to get them all? I mean, does anybody know any detail on any of this stuff, Jeff?
Never. And a big question, you mentioned the gifts to the states that, you know, were all recently awarded, and no one really knows. I haven't seen anything that really shows, you know, how that money must be spent, whether, you know, for general budget or how it's restricted. But we know that the major cities received a lot of money, and now the question is how they spend it.
Well, you and I, when we were younger, and maybe I just don't look, if you go by a project, I mean, sometimes, you know, you'd be driving through Ohio or someplace, and you'll see...
there'd be a big placard, big sign that says who's paying for it.
Yeah, right, and it'll say, this is from Bill something and Southern, and it'll give you the name of the bill or the number of the bill out of the house. I haven't seen one of those in ages, have you?
That's true, no. I haven't. I guess, we'll look to... Well, all eyes are on New York right now, right? This primary election tomorrow. Are you following that? I think that's one of the more exciting stories.
Yeah, but I don't really know who the players are.
First of all, the evolution of the electorate in New York, how they've recently been shifting over to the more moderate candidates. They have, of course, they had Maya Wiley, who's a very progressive candidate, and then Catherine Garcia, who the New York Times editorial board endorsed. But suddenly they would be in Andrew Yang. You know, they would all be typical front runners in the New York primary just because of their overall progressive attitude. But now you have Eric Adams sitting on top, and he's obviously they're all liberal left-leaning candidates, as they should be, to represent the city of New York. But in the case of Eric Adams, he's sitting as a front runner on the day before the primary, which will be the first time there's a ranked choice voting in effect, which will be interesting to watch in New York as well. But Adams is basically sitting there because he's a former city police officer and talked about walking around with a gun once he becomes a mayor, right? He's taking a hardline approach towards public safety and kind of pushing back on the defund the police movement. And that's why this has become a very important election, and that's why this, a New York mayoral election is always a national issue. In this case, it will really be an election.
Jeff, are they
issue?
Are they non-denominational like ours now, or everybody just runs in one primary? Is not Democrat Republican anymore?
I believe that is correct. I think this is technically the Democratic primary, or maybe I just say that because there's no. There's no chance of a there's no Republican on the radar there.
Well, when did Chicago change? I ask this question because I grew up in Evergreen Park most of my life, across the street from Chicago, but they never had a Democrat-Republican thing. Virtually every thing that you've been added, and you couldn't run two parties in a row. So it would be, one year was the Progressive Party, the next year was a better. Now, Chicago, I don't even remember that change, but now there's no Democratic primary, Republican primary, just people run in a primary, correct?
That's right.
And I'm the way you're describing this, I'm wondering if Detroit, Manny, why don't you look that up? You can probably find it. Is it just the Democratic Party that's the real election?
There might be two primaries tomorrow for Democrats and Republicans in New York, but I know that there's no other primary. This is it. So either they're all on one ballot, or there's two separate ballots. New York.
Do you think? Let's talk about a far afield question. Do you think that all politics here will eventually go that way? That the 10 people will run for governor, and the top two run. It doesn't matter whether you're Democrat or Republican. That there won't be two separate primaries. You think that is a trend?
There's a lot of, particularly with ranked choice voting, RCV, in place, there's a lot of good reasons for it. I think what we're getting the benefit of is, with a couple states adopting that in recent local and regional elections or statewide elections, and now seeing New York run a ranked choice voting primary for the first time ever in the mayoral race, I think we're going to start seeing what we need to see and more examples of how that works. So short answer would be, that'd be an ideal way to, because there's a lot of benefits to ranked choice voting, and that is it tends to isolate the hardcore partisans, and it also tends to minimize, or let's say reduce, the impact of their vote. And it seems to find a middle among the electorate, because you get, in New York, you'll be able to rank five candidates in order.
Okay. And it's got to be
not
like that.
Three, as in other elections, but five. So you're going to end up voting, by the time you get to candidate number two or three or four or five, you're holding your nose, but you're saying, hey, in the perfect world, I just don't want to see this guy, so you're naming other people. And the way ranked choice voting works, of course, is that at the end of the first round of voting, if nobody has a clear majority, then they take off those people with the lowest votes, and then they run the vote again. The same vote same ballot that you cast is counted again, but now they're looking at your second candidate, and then third, and fourth, each time dropping somebody off until somebody reaches a majority. So it, in theory, helps find the middle. It clearly wouldn't have elected a Donald Trump, in a Republican primary, because it tends, again, to move the extremes and find the middle of a party.
Well, how do you find
it? It'll be a really interesting test to see how this works tomorrow. But the current conventional wisdom and the prediction markets are calling Eric Adams to be the 60% outcome front runner. Catherine Garcia, the New York Times, who the New York Times endorsed, is sitting at a 25% probability. And Andrew Yang, who was once a pretty firm front runner from the point he announced his candidacy in New York, is now down in the teens, percentage as an outcome.
What happened to him? Was there a reason for his decline?
Good question.
It's a great question, Matt. Eric Adams, it's really a question of him losing votes to Eric Adams. Yang came out saying that he was in favor of restoring policing and getting tougher standards, because crime in New York has now become the single major issue in the campaign, and that's a big surprise. And that's what the progressives like Maya Wiley don't know how to handle. So Yang was on the right side of that question. But then he got hurt in a debate last week. When the subject of homeless people came up, as opposed to showing empathy for the homeless, or at least this is how he was critiqued, he looked at homelessness through the lens of ruining the everyday lives of New Yorkers and people doing business in New York, and that the impact it's having on the city, as opposed to the impact it might be having on those people's lives, or homeless's lives. So
he was like the nerve of those
homeless.
He was
roundly accused of not being empathetic, and that took him from second place and knocked him down materially down to third place right now in the polling.
It's I think, Jeff, we don't have that much time, unfortunately. I always talk to you for like a month. It's not a problem. Don't some of the extreme liberals, of which, you know, sometimes I'm accused of, which I shouldn't be, don't they understand, if you read anything about history, that I don't care if you're Adolf Hitler, if you think your kids can't walk down the block, law and order always wins if people think they're unsafe. I mean, it always wins, no matter how. I mean, it has through every single dictator was a law and order candidate, right? When the place was a mess. Or am I wrong?
Yeah, that's why Eric Adams is sitting on top of the polls right now.
Well, right now, if somebody downtown here, if you listened earlier, there's been four murders on Saturday afternoons in the last 3 weeks within 1,000 yards of his office. So you think people in Chicago are going to say, I don't care what we got to do, we got to stop this?
I mean, you know, another rough weekend in Chicago. What was it, four murders and I forget how many shootings. And, you know, it occurred to me, I liked what Lori Lightfoot said about the Bears. And it shows that she has, you know, she has the strength, because obviously that's a negotiating play with Arlington Park, and, you know, they're trying, that comes up during renovations. They've played this card before. They have a lease till 2033. And her kind of smart-ass comment was, hey, focus on beating the Packers and being relevant in October. It was kind of a hard, you know, that was a nice hard-ass attack approach to Chicago Bears. It would be nice to see her apply that to crime in the city, which is going to be what brings her down eventually as well.
Jeff, I'm going to say, if you and I put that together, we only got a second here, if you and I put that press release together, we would say, go to Arlington Heights. Pay for it yourself. This is America. Build a place. By the way, we have a perfectly good place here, and we're going to attract another team, and they're going to be the Chicago team. Knock yourself out. And by the way, every improvement we've promised for the next 12 years, we're stopping. That wouldn't go over too well, would it?
That would do it.
Anyway, take care of yourself, Jeff. SP
right.
Futures up 19.
Bye, Chief.
SP Futures up 31. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
Hey, guys. What's up, G? Want to go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early. I
got to get out of here. I think I'm going to lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.